Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Program. My name is Anders Hovey, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, and I'm joined today by Michal Medan, Director of the China Energy Program at the Institute. Today, we're talking about the critical topic of coal in China. And by the way, we should always mention that we covered coal along with pretty much everything else in the Guide to Chinese Climate Policy, which the Institute published last year. It's available for download from our website. Today, we should be able to give a bit of an update to some of the things we wrote about in the guide, but of course, some things will not have changed, for example, the central role of coal in China's present energy economy. So, Michal, with that intro, I think everybody listening is already aware that China is heavily reliant on coal for energy in general and electricity in particular, but maybe you could just refresh us a little bit, give us a rundown on how China coal use compares to the rest of the world in absolute terms and percentage-wise.
Sure. And this is where we do a bit of numbers and then stop talking about numbers. But of course, the magnitude of China is such that it accounts for over half of global coal consumption, or at least it accounted for over half of global coal consumption in 2021. And that number has probably gone up a little bit in 2022. For China domestically, coal accounts for 55% of its primary energy. And that compares to, depends on the country, but anywhere from sort of 20 to 30% in other sort of developed economies where their reliance is equally on sort of coal, gas, oil, with the share of coal rapidly declining. And importantly, it accounted for 63% of electricity in 2021. The trend has been for the share of coal in the energy mix to fall, but with energy consumption still growing and the country industrializing and urbanizing, actually in absolute terms, coal in the past few years, coal consumption has been rising. We did have a bit of a hiatus in 2014 when coal use started to fall, and there was a lot of talk about peak coal in China. And we had that sort of plateau for a number of years, but since 2017, 2018, started to inch up. And last year, we really saw coal use increasing. And I think beyond the numbers, it's important to acknowledge that coal is not just a key contributor to China's energy supplies. It's also a key contributor to industrial use, either through electricity or direct heat. And it is the kind of mainstay of the Chinese political economy, right? The industrial activities that have propelled China to becoming the world's second largest economy. And also it's a big employer. It employs almost 3 million people. That's kind of the size of Norway. So the social, political considerations of this sector are as significant as its contribution to energy use. I think for you, Anders, then, this importance of coal, you know, we look at it on a national level. There's also the regional economies, right? And China is sort of a big coal country, but within China, there are a number of coal capitals. Can you tell us a bit about what they are and how this provincial outlook plays out in the energy transition?
I think that in China, and also in the provinces, there's a recognition that each province's situation is unique, just as much as China's own situation is unique. There are some provinces in China that are very resource dependent and less developed. And as leading the list is the province of Shanxi, which you could consider as the capital of coal in China, providing a fairly large share of the country's coal supplies, but also being much more reliant than most other provincial economies, and seeing that coal intensity of the economy maintain a high rate, whereas most other provinces have seen coal play a less important role over time in the economy, even when its absolute production might be still increasing. But you also have provinces like Inner Mongolia, Xinjiang, and others that are highly dependent on resources in general, one of which is coal, and would see their role in the energy economy as a supplier of energy to the rest of the country. Then you have another slice of the country where maybe these are more advanced industrial provinces, coastal provinces, that nevertheless, because of their high industrial production, use a lot of energy and also have a lot of domestic coal supplies while also importing energy from other places. And a good example of that would be the very large province of Shandong province, a coastal province, call it a highly industrialized province which both has a lot of coal power, a lot of coal supplies, but also imports energy from other provinces. Another example, which is very interesting, is Guangdong province, where the province is perhaps more diverse in its energy supplies. It's part of the Southern China power grid and gets a lot of energy from outside of the province from hydro, but it's nevertheless building a large amount of coal capacity to power its industrial growth. And this is one of the most advanced industrial provinces in the East Coast. So there really are quite a diverse set of provinces. It's interesting also to note that the provincial strategies with respect to economic development often differ markedly. So China itself plans to continue to develop its coal economy even while seeking carbon neutrality. The same is true for provinces. And we see some provinces where coal is very central, looking at coal for making hydrogen and also trying to use coal power for electrification of the economy. And then you also see provinces where there's a little bit more emphasis on not phasing out coal, but on transitioning away from centralized power plants and towards distributed energy and towards renewables. So there is quite a diversity in terms of China's provinces' strategies on coal, as well as their attitudes towards the relative role of coal compared to other energy sources.
That's interesting. And obviously on hydrogen, we published a paper recently looking at some city strategies. But the importance of coal in hydrogen is one important factor that kind of gives a few warning signs about the role of hydrogen in China's decarbonization strategy. But we talk a lot about coal and how significant it is. And equally, you mentioned provinces' net zero or decarbonization strategies, which are still very much alive and advancing. So can you contrast a little bit the kind of geography of coal with the geography of renewables and where there are overlaps? It was interesting that you talked about Guangdong, which of course is a big consumer of LNG and has a lot of gas and power, that you mentioned that actually Guangdong is looking to build more coal. And it's recently, I think, revised down its estimates for future gas and power and revised up both renewables and coal.
Yeah, there is a very interesting geography of energy supply in China. Most commonly, it's discussed as the provinces of the north and west are relatively rich in energy supplies, and that goes for coal, as well as for gas, as well as for solar, as well as for wind. However, when you look at the map of provinces, it's a lot more nuanced than that broad generalization would seem to imply. In particular, for wind, there is a large amount of wind capacity in the northern half of the country. But that doesn't imply that it's all in the most remote provinces of the northern part of the country. So, for example, Hebei province, which northern Hebei is very windy, and that's perhaps not very well connected to the rest of the east, but other parts of the east, northeast, have a large amount of wind capacity as well. For solar, the picture is a little bit more stark, where although clearly the solar resources are better in those remote western provinces, because of the cost of transmission and because of the relative economics of distributed energy, most solar energy now cumulatively is installed in the eastern provinces nearer to the population centers. And most new solar, importantly, is also going into those eastern provinces. And that really does create a potential bifurcation of energy strategies where the northern and western resource-intensive economies, they are seeking to build out these very large energy bases with the support of the central government. And you do hear a lot of media attention around those energy bases, which generally include renewables plus coal. But as well, the central government in the five-year plan had indicated that eastern provinces should focus more on self-reliance and building out distributed renewable energy. And there's a little bit of tension there between both the provincial strategies that what provinces are anticipating that they will be able to do with the new energy economy, as well as what the central government is saying about that. Speaking of what China is saying about the transition, what has China said officially about how coal fits into the 2030 and 2060 goals, and how is the recent trend affecting that strategy for carbon neutrality?
I mean, there hasn't been an explicit roadmap, right, for how we get to 2030 or 2060. You've got very different views on how this plays out and the role of coal in that. Obviously, it has to fall, but we don't know when, we don't know how quickly. What we do know, Xi Jinping has said that coal sort of shouldn't have a high peak. We know that the government has announced that in this current five-year plan, the aim is to limit the growth in new coal resources, but that still allows for more coal in the mix. And I think these notions of what is a high peak are now open to debate, right? I think 2 years ago, there was a lot of talk about China being able to peak its emissions well before 2030, maybe even in 2026 or 2027. That kind of talk has been silenced recently, and we don't hear as much of that. So that before 2030 is pretty open to interpretation. And then the official goal is for coal to peak and decline by 2030. So in the 15th five-year plan, coal is set to peak and decline. But again, how quickly, that is something that we don't really know and will depend both on the penetration of renewables, the speed of electrification, and also on solutions that will allow coal to remain in the energy mix, but obviously for emissions to be abated, like carbon capture, utilization, and storage, where there's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of talk in the global energy industry, but actually in China from a policy perspective, and we do have a chapter on this in the Guide to Chinese Climate Policies as well, policy action on CCUS is relatively limited. And I think the view, very simplistically, is that you don't have a concrete price on carbon yet. And so if you can't monetize it and you can't use that resource, then you're not just going to sort of stick it in the ground. The emphasis is on utilization. And when there are views on how it could be utilized and it could be monetized, then perhaps CCUS could become a bigger part of the energy system, and therefore coal will remain in the mix. But for now, CCUS, there are experiments and there are pilot programs, but they're not very, so they're not economically efficient and they're not scalable for now. And so, you know, a lot of China's targets on carbon intensity and energy intensity, they are all intensity based. So basically, they assume that GDP continues to grow and that the idea is to increase the efficiency of operations. That's what the emissions trading system is also all about. It is still, you know, you talked about tensions earlier. There's that fundamental tension between needing coal to remain the backbone of the energy system and a critical, reliable source, but also gradually reduce its use in the system. So how do you limit it while ensuring growth? And that's where the intensity, where all the metrics are intensity based. I think the idea is to increase efficiency, but not to sacrifice that reliability that coal offers. Now, within that, and we've seen this talk about reliability, I'm going to turn this to you, on the role of coal in the short term. I think we kind of know that in the medium to long term, coal, the share of coal in the energy mix has to fall and coal has to be phased down or phased out. But in the short term, of course, we are seeing greater demand for coal, but we're also seeing that the economy has been soft. There isn't a huge amount of discussion from the Chinese government about a big infrastructure-focused stimulus that would boost energy demand and emissions. But emissions are still up this year. So, Anders, why is that?
Well, as usual, there are multiple different explanations and factors at work. The end of COVID, of course, plays a role. There was a recovery in certain sectors, industrial demand, even though it's not connected to any explicit stimulus policy. Nevertheless, for example, projects that might have been delayed at the end of last year, the cement industry just saw a big burst of activity. But in general, there was a recovery in industrial electricity demand, which a lot of that ended up coming from coal because China is still suffering from an ongoing crisis of hydropower availability due to ongoing drought conditions in various regions that supply a lot of the country's hydropower. And so coal is basically taking up the slack for hydro while also meeting a lot of the incremental demand from industry. And then that sort of goes to the first half of the year overall. But then in the most recent months, what we really are seeing again is strong heat wave conditions, drought conditions across the country, and just a very long periods of 40 degree plus weather in certain big Chinese cities. And that is bringing forward the residential electricity demand for air conditioning, commercial demand for air conditioning, cooling. And, you know, historically, residential electricity demand is not a main driver of power consumption, electricity consumption, but it is a main driver of peak power consumption. And that sort of raises fears about power outages and whether or not China has adequate capacity, coal-fired power capacity to meet peak load, as well as whether China has enough coal on hand in order to generate that power. So a lot of these things are coming together to bring about increasing coal use, even though renewables are also increasing. And we might talk about that a little bit further on. But just, you know, back to this summer, a lot of provinces so far are reporting that they have seen peak loads, electricity loads this summer, up 10% from the prior year. And that's only, we're not even through summer, right? So what could happen, we might see something more like what happened in Sichuan last year, where peak load can increase by much, much more significant amounts, like, you know, even 30% if the heat can get strong enough. And, you know, that's the potential cause for serious outages. And I don't think we've seen that yet, even though there are some issues where there may have been curtailments in certain regions or preemptive cuts in certain industries, just to make sure that energy is saved for a true crisis situation. Mikhail, speaking of industrial demand going forward, what do you think that industry's strategy for reducing coal use might be? You mentioned energy intensity is sort of in all the plans, but beyond energy intensity, is it mostly efficiency or is it more new technology that will enable the big energy consuming industries to peak and then reduce coal consumption?
It's, as you say, numerous elements, numerous factors. It's a bit of all of the above, right? I mean, there's the big industrial consumers are, you know, the steel, cement, aluminium. Those, part of the idea, I think, is that they peak as urbanization and industrialization sort of peaks. So there's another decade of, or under a decade of a lot of growth in those industries. Some of them have actually, just after the 30-60 targets were issued, they had pretty ambitious peaking plans that have, some of them have now been watered down a little bit. But one element is just that demand for these industrial goods will fall off, just as, you know, again, urbanization will have peaked. There are plans to increase efficiencies, but as you and Ned talked about in your podcast on the manufacturing sector, a lot of them have already introduced pretty big efficiency gains. And so there is more to be done. And there are recycling strategies that can be used for steel, for instance. But the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, has already been picked. And those efficiency gains might not be as significant as they were in the past. But you do have a combination of reduced demand, efficiency gains, technologies. I mean, hydrogen is one area that could help industrial demand decarbonize. And I think there's always, as with the conversation of the energy transition, the kind of technologies that we don't know of yet that could come and save the day. Now, they feel like a little bit of a unicorn, but there is that element as well. But overall, that does point to the direction of coal still remaining quite significant in industry. A lot of questions about the role of gas in industry, because, of course, it can help to reduce the emissions from coal. And some industries will certainly switch to gas. Some of them have already switched. But this year, we've heard the government say that they want to limit new coal to gas switching. So gas as a solution will depend on the availability of competitively priced gas, but also on the kind of physical supplies and their ability to meet the different demand centers. Again, it goes back to a provincial question. And some provinces are going more aggressively on gas and industry as a way to reduce coal consumption, while others will either wait for it to peak, efficiency gains, and some combination of technology. But Anders, if we think about sort of taking all these things together, there are a lot of mixed messages, right? And when we talk about provinces, it feels like some provinces are rationing electricity supplies to avoid power outages, while others are spurring economic activity to get GDP growth targets. If you think about it from, I guess, the government attitude and central government attitude towards coal this year, do you think it is more favorable? Is it sort of looking at coal as a way to enhance energy security? Or do you see some more ambivalence in the attitude towards coal?
I think there is some ambivalence, but nevertheless, the emphasis on coal has increased markedly in recent years, even though the emphasis on energy security has been there since 2019. That's not really changed, but the emphasis on coal has increased. And I think it's very interesting to hear the different lingo that is introduced in certain documents about coal being the ballast stone of the China's energy system or the foundation of energy system, and most recently, coal being called as China's main energy source. And all those phrases, at the same time as the documents that have come out officially, place less emphasis or concern around potential for overcapacity or stranded assets in the coal or coal power sectors. Apparently, there's no current perception of overcapacity in these sectors, although I think that there is possibly actually still overcapacity remaining, or that risk remains. And indeed, there is some small amount of criticism or controversy on this topic. Quite recently, the head of the CEC, China Electricity Council, mentioned that it was important to avoid overcapacity in coal and not pursue the same old path of just building more coal every time that more energy is needed. And then, of course, as we mentioned, there are provincial plans that are putting more emphasis on coal as well. We see a lot of emphasis on clean and efficient utilization of coal. And of course, all new coal plants that are built are of higher efficiency than older ones. So it's relatively easy to comply with this rhetorical phrase without, for example, deploying carbon capture or some radical new technologies. I do think that also, as you mentioned, coal is seen as more reliable and better economically for China than gas in many instances. So the focus on replacing coal with gas has gone down quite a bit, and you don't hear too much about this topic anymore. It doesn't mean there's no demand or demand for gas is going down. It just means that there's just less emphasis on that gas switching as a policy strategy. And speaking of that topic, what could you tell us about coal imports? China's not just getting more gas imports over time, but also looking to get more coal imports this year. Where are coal imports coming from recently and why?
Just before that, on the government's attitude towards coal, we saw, of course, the 14 five-year plan talk about coal as a balancing mechanism for sort of renewables and their intermittency. On stranded assets, interestingly, there is no talk about the risk of stranded assets in the future. But when you talk about phasing out coal, then you have a lot of academics and studies pointing to the fact that the Chinese coal fleet is young, right? It's 10, 15 year old on average, and therefore you cannot phase it out very quickly because you risk having stranded assets. So it's a interesting way to use those concerns about stranded assets as a way to not or to limit the reduction in coal capacity in the short term. To your question about imports, China has been importing more coal from Russia. Interestingly, though, in the past few months, coal imports have been surging, but from Australia and Indonesia, from higher quality coal providers. With Australia, of course, China had the self-imposed coal ban that was lifted only in January. So ever since it was lifted, we've seen more Australian coal coming into China. There's an issue of the quality of the coal, which is higher than domestic Chinese coal and also of Russian coal. There's a price differential between domestic coal and imported. There's been a fall in prices for Australian and Indonesian coal. So that's all coming in. But it's interesting, we've seen also an increase in domestic coal production. We're at around 5% up year on year in January to May. Now, that's slower than the increase that we saw last year. I mean, May alone last year had a 10% year-on-year increase. Now, of course, we have to bear in mind that the base in 2021 was low. We had the power outages in 2021 and then a rush to increase coal output, which was reflected in 2022. So the increases this year are coming from an already relatively high base. Nonetheless, we're seeing more coal production. We're seeing much more coal imports. And it goes back to that conundrum of, well, where is it all going? So anecdotally, there are stocks accumulating of coal with some of the generators. Some of it is a price arbitrage. So, you know, figuring out what is the best, the most competitively priced source of coal that is also adequate in terms of quality. But some does raise questions about the industrial demand and how strong it is. It goes back to what you were saying about, you know, the power outage concerns, the availability of hydro and renewables, And probably just the fact that provinces want to avoid at all cost any kind of power outages this summer. But we're seeing much more coal coming into the system. And not all of it is cheap Russian coal. A lot of the imported coal is still cheaper than domestically produced coal, but not all of it is cheap Russian coal. With that, though, can I get your input on the price of coal and how cheap, relatively cheap coal imports, are they denting the economics of the energy transition in any way?
I think the answer is mostly no. Basically, coal prices had experienced an increase in 2021, which was partly responsible for energy crisis that year. And so the recent decline in energy prices that China has benefited from in terms of imports is just counteracting that move. And then meanwhile, wind and solar continue to get more competitive even after the subsidies have been reduced or eliminated for most wind and solar. Nevertheless, the installation rates for new wind and solar capacity continue to go up, and solar in particular has been surging. Wind and solar are actually still quite a small percentage of the overall share of electricity production, around 15% last year. So there's a lot of room for growth for renewables, and especially because they seem to be competitive with coal power. And as I said, there's a lot of room for them to grow without really competing head-to-head with coal. Then that gives renewables a better path. As well, there are these very hard government targets around establishing clean energy bases, as well as the new whole county PV program, which I've written about fairly recently, which is going to really lead to a surge in uptake of solar on rooftop level around eastern China. And so you really just see no slowdown at all whatsoever in the renewable economy in China. And I think that that will remain the case going forward, because that transition is no longer explicitly dependent on subsidies, although it probably does depend on the evolution of the market and what the relative share of the pie renewables are able to take home once coal plants start asking for and demanding more payments for just having the capacity to balance renewables, which is sort of the new government strategy for keeping those coal plants operating. How do you do that in a way that the coal plants are still able to survive financially? It's probably going to change a little bit of the economic picture between coal and renewables going forward. But, you know, in general, I would say the energy transition is slow and steady, wins the race, and it's basically going ahead. It's just due to the current situation, coal is also seeing strong growth, and it doesn't mean it's an either or, basically. You know, also, we have seen renewed attention from the public, at least, on the issue of air quality. And although coal power is not a main contributor to air quality, coal in general, especially coal use in energy, is a contributor to air quality issues. And I think that that will eventually lead to more policy focus on transitioning industry away from direct coal combustion and towards electrification, which again helps the whole power sector. Growing demand is a way of making sure that you feed revenue into those coal power plants that otherwise are seeing declining utilization, declining capacity factors. So there's a bit of a rebalancing of the energy economy towards electricity production, which then causes potential problems and bottlenecks in the economy, especially in the summertime when we have a heat wave condition. So I think with that, we're probably ready to sort of wrap up and summarize. And basically, if I listen to what you've said, what we've said together, you know, coal is not going anywhere fast in China. We're definitely not in the phase where we can talk about closing down or phasing out coal. But the energy transition is still on track. And this does, interestingly enough, have some geopolitical implications, which I want to mention because we will be having an Oxford Energy Forum publication about the topic of geopolitics of energy and China forthcoming. China is back on the world market seeking to buy energy in general and coal in particular. And of course, the coal push also has diplomatic implications. It has implications for gas. My perception is that China's interest in switching to gas has softened somewhat. And then, you know, obviously for the climate. Now, simultaneous, all of the above push for coal and clean energy seems clear, but I think that there are still some contradictions, some uncertainties. Does China need all the coal capacity that's under construction? Will this create stranded assets? Who will pay in that case when there are stranded asset issues? And does the energy security push restrict the already constrained space for markets in the energy sector. And finally, with this supply side push that China is doing this year, is China doing enough on the demand side, especially given all the new air conditioning led summertime peak load and in light of worsening climate change and heat waves? So there are still a lot of questions around coal and around the energy transition in China, which we'll be discussing on a future podcast. So, Michal, thank you very much for joining. And for audience, I thank you as well for joining. I hope you've appreciated our discussion today. We welcome your feedback and thoughts, and we look forward to our next discussion and hope you'll join us again next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.